Let the Way Be Open by Abigail Spinner McBride, a wonderful musician who hails from Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, wow, what a weekend. Were you at any of the Wisconsin Solidarity rallies Saturday? If you were, how did it feel to empower yourself? You know, I posted on Thursday an article on Facebook that I want to be sure you're aware of because all of this ties together. It was called The Primitive Conservative Mind and how this authoritarian individual responsibility mentality just circumvents believing in any social consciousness or social justice. And, you know, it's rooted in the strict father authoritarian archetypes, which in my mind is the antithesis of what goddess advocates believe. We believe in mother rule, nurturing, caring, partnership, our interconnection, wholeness, sustainability, peace. Yes, peace. This is not just a social or religious fight. This is a political fight. And I have to be honest, I believe when conservatives believe like this, it's regressive. That's why people like Starhawk and Rhianne Eisler say if goddess spirituality were aligned with a political party, well, these ideas are liberal, they're progressive, so goddess would be a Democrat. So we must reconcile our spirituality with our politics. You know, pagans have no business, in my opinion, siding with oil companies and polluters and people who would take away from the poor. But on to another subject, as I promised, in honor of Keith Olbermann of Countdown fame on MSNBC, who we now know will be back in June as the news director on Al Gore's current TV, I'll ask the question he would have asked every night. Mr. Boehner, where are the jobs? We thought you were so concerned, or so you told the voters, but all you seem to be working on is redefining rape and trying to take rights away from women. All your party seems to be doing is taking rights from workers. So what's next? Fire or lose all the teachers, then say budget cuts only allow teaching white boys in school? Somebody actually emailed me that they had a dream that happened. Well, some might sound like hyperbole, but they see this as taking away average workers' rights on the basis of lies and deceit and being puppets for the corporations is a very slippery slope. That's how a lot of us out here see your side, Mr. Boehner. And I also want to take a minute because something happened recently that we need to reference. Merlin Stone has passed away. If you don't know who she is, please Google her, look at her books on Amazon. Few people have inspired me like Merlin Stone and her work. Because of her, I found goddess, whether that goddess be deity, archetype, or ideal. Because of her, my life has been filled with inspiration, meaning, and direction. So thank you, beloved Merlin Stone. May you smile down on us and guide us from that special resting place in the arms of the mother. But let's turn our attention to tonight's show and tonight's guests. As many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy of some selfish, disconnected men and their war gods, well, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, disrespected. That's why here on the show, I am dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. Yes, we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles, to look under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past so we know why things are the way they are today, how they have come to be turned on their head and so unnatural. And we're going to go about setting things right. Why? Because if we want to save ourselves as a species, I think we have no other choice. If we want to restore balance, harmony, wholeness, sanity, it is women armed with our like-minded brothers and with the ideals of the sacred feminine who can set things back on course. So let me once again repeat what have become the mottos for the show. The first is from a 19th century German philosopher, Arthur Schopenhauer, and it goes like this. First, an idea is ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it's accepted for being self-evident. And there's one more we think attributed to Gandhi, and it goes like this. First, they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you. But then you win. Okay, that will have to serve as my What's the Buzz segment for tonight. And just a few more housekeeping things before we get to our first guest, Pam Wells, who's with us tonight, talking about the Divine Feminine. And then Julie Lohr, she's going to talk with you about discovering the goddess through astrology and symbols. So on these final last announcements, please remember, or if it's the first time you've heard, Blog Talk is no longer free to host, so we're looking for a sponsor. This platform we have here to talk to you across the globe used to be free. Well, now they're charging us, and so far it's not a lot of money. It's only about $35, $40 a month. But, you know, once they start charging, we don't know where that's going to go. So we're asking for contributions. We're looking for a sponsor. Because as Goddess teaches us, what is nourished, what's nurtured, well, it thrives, and what you neglect withers. So thanks to those of you who have already sent in contributions, and I hope some of us, more of you can as well. You can go to the PayPal buttons on my webpage, KarenTate.com, and on the section of the website called the Goddess Store, and you can make a donation of any amount you can afford. And even small donations, they all add up. It all helps. And please be sure to remember the three F's. If you're looking at my show page, those three F's are favorite, friend, and follow. Become a favorite, mark Sacred Voices of the Sacred Feminine a favorite, and become our friend. And when you click follow, you will never miss a notice of the new guests that are going to be on the show each week. I also want to make sure you know about the tour I'm leading to Turkey in November for men and women. We're going to be doing lots of cool things. Turkish baths, seeing the whirling dervishes, doing rituals at archaeological sites, wonderful musicians, museums and musicians, shopping. I've been to Turkey three times already. It is a diamond in the rough. They aren't on the euro yet, so it's still cheap. We're only going to take 20 people, and people are signing up every month. So please, if you're thinking about it, secure your place early. I could go on, but I won't. I'm going to go ahead and get to our first guest tonight, Pam Wells. Let me tell you about her. She's been working as a fine artist, graphic designer, and illustrator for over 20 years, specializing in creative work that leads to greater consciousness. Her artwork transforms and awakens others to the healing power of their own unconscious minds by exploring the meaning and power of universal archetypes. Her current paintings of goddesses are about the transformational and mystical aspects of the divine feminine as an integral part of the one God. By creating paintings that resonate deeply with her own experience of the divine feminine, Pamela strives to create a shift in the viewer's relationship to the feminine aspects of God by awakening them to integrate the love and power within their own mysterious depths. She believes when we learn to live from a place of love, the feminine, we become more compassionate about our own suffering, the suffering of all beings, and more engaged in healing ourselves and the planet. Pamela has pioneered her own unique style of painting and shown her goddess art throughout the country. She authored and illustrated a collector's edition guidebook and card set for exploring the divine feminine and the evolution of consciousness titled Affirmations for the Everyday Goddess, Spiritual Guidebook, and 22 Wisdom Cards for Contemplation and Prayer. This box set is available from artmagicpublishing.com. That was artmagicpublishing.com. New Leaf Distribution, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and DeVore's & Company. Well, listeners, I have to tell you, I have seen that deck. It is awesome. It is just so beautiful. Words fail me, quite frankly, Pam. You are just an incredible, incredible artist.
Thank you, Karen. Hi, how are you this evening? Great to be online with you on the phone and with your listeners tonight.
Well, I'm so glad you're with us, too, and I hope they will go to your website, artmagicpublishing.com, and actually see some of these images. I mean, you know, I've been exposed to a lot of decks, and I just love your choice of color, the style of the goddesses. I mean, they feel relevant to me, you know. I mean, they sort of have a contemporary feel about them. I think they're just so relatable. You know, you can relate to each of the images, and they're gorgeous. They're just gorgeous.
I can
imagine, you know, I besides having them in a deck, can you get the images in any other form, like a wall hanging for framing or something?
Oh, yes. I do sell prints of all the cards in the deck. Those are available online as well at the artmagicpublishing.com site. And I also began doing soul portraits and goddess portraits recently. I finished the deck about 2 years ago, and that's given me this transitional time to sort of reevaluate how I'd like to move forward with this kind of artwork, the divine feminine. And so this is my latest offering, is to actually work with women and their sacred contracts and their soul work, and to take that and translate it into a soul portrait or a goddess portrait of themselves. So part of the bigger picture of the work they want to work on for themselves is incorporating that piece.
So
I'm really excited about it.
How would you define a soul portrait? What is a soul portrait?
That would be tapping into an individual's contract, their sacred contract at birth. There's actually a wonderful author, Carolyn Mace. I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with her work. But this is the work I feel is so powerful for anybody who's on a life path of meaning and purpose, who is in any way a healer, clairsentient, clairvoyant, clairaudient, who feels called to tap into the mysteries and the greater meanings of life. The sacred contract is this beautiful wheel of soul work that pinpoints the archetype within that individual's lifetime that they can actually focus on. It's a blueprint or a map of where they can head, which paths would be the wisest, most meaningful, congruent paths for them to choose. And with that sacred contract, I integrate a soul portrait of their likeness with the sacred contract. So it's kind of a downloading of the information. I actually found out through this process of putting the deck, authoring the deck, doing the paintings. I didn't realize it at first. It took me several years, but the work kind of came through me. It was channeled through me. It wasn't necessarily something I sat down and thought about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the information. The imagery isn't coming through the part of me that is thinking. It's more of an intuitive, visionary sort of work. And so in that sense, a lot of the people that are going to pick up a tarot deck or a deck about the self-help or meaningful, if you find yourself in the bookstore in the self-help section a lot,
mm-hmm.
These are usually the type of people that are on a quest and want to find a bigger purpose and meaningfulness and connection with spirit, divine, goddess. And that excites me because it's this level of consciousness of re-remembering who we really are and going back to the divine feminine.
So are you saying that that's how these images for the deck came to you? It the sort of the esoterics of it, it was, you feel like you sort of channeled it?
Yes, it absolutely was. I've always had a visual capacity. I've always been able to visualize very vibrantly in color, and it was just a natural next step. Was to take the imagery that I could see and to put that on canvas or to put it on a digital painting and translate it in that way. And then as I went through the process, I learned about archetypes, and the pieces of the puzzle came together for me.
Well, let me ask you, I don't know if you can do this or not, but I'm just curious. If you had to guess based on what you know about me, what would you say my archetype is?
Oh, definitely I would say you would have a mother archetype.
Okay.
Because you care so much for Gaia and the planet. You know, you're a mother does this. She protects. She's fierce when she needs to. And as we were talking earlier before the show, I so much admire your ability to take the mantle of this politically active mantle of saying, we are here. You will hear us and listen. I am the voice of the feminine. And that's a very challenging place to be in patriarchy. And yet you do this so brilliantly and naturally. So I would say the mother is definitely one of yours, and maybe a goddess, high priestess, or warrior type archetype that can actually say, I'm ready, you know, to take this on.
Right. Well, that feels right.
Yeah.
It feels like that's sort of what I've been doing. But, you know, it's like, how can I not? I mean, really, that's what it boils down
to.
How can I not?
That's an archetype. But that's what an archetype is. It's like, and when we meet people, we usually unconsciously pick up two or three archetypes within the first few minutes of meeting them. And so it's wonderful if we can become actually literate or able to consciously say, oh, she has a mystic archetype, or he's an artist, or, you know, and so on and so on. It's very useful because then we know a little bit about the person we're with, so we can mirror and honor them for the gifts that they were born into. And that's the same contract.
Well, it helps us understand them too. I would imagine
yes.
if you can understand your sister or your mother or your neighbor or your boss better,
yep.
You know, if you see them through the archetype that they're living.
Absolutely, and that's why I am so excited by the tarot, because the tarot, for anybody who's not really familiar with it. Particularly the first 22 cards of a tarot deck, also called the Major Arcana cards, these are the cards that I illustrated for the affirmations for the Everyday Goddess deck. And the reason I did that is because they are the major archetypes. They're the big ones, you know,
mm-hmm.
that we all share. They're universal. They talk about universal truths. They are great archetypes for learning, downloading wisdom, and
mm-hmm.
understanding how we're connected to the divine, how we're connected to Goddess and God. And the more we learn, the more I really believe the more we learn self-knowledge, the more we get closer to being authentically aligned with our own truth.
Mm-hmm.
And when we empower ourselves that way, then we can speak that truth and stand for something that we believe in, that we came into the world to talk about, to express, that's part of what excites us and really charges us, and that's our path to connect with.
Well, you know, we hear people so often say, what's my purpose in life? I think I'm
right.
hearing you say that this helps us figure that out maybe, huh?
Absolutely. I sometimes secretly wish, not so secretly anymore, since I'm telling your audience, but I'm just like, gosh, it would be so wonderful if they just took every 13 and 14-year-old and just sat them down and co-created with them their sacred contract. And then you have it for the rest of your life, you know. It's this beautiful blueprint, and it becomes like a hologram over time because it seems so simple at first. It's on a flat, you put it on a piece of paper, and it's like, okay, I've got these 12 archetypes. But over time, it becomes this interconnected, all your archetypes are working beautifully together.
So you're
and
not just
things,
one, probably. You're probably maybe a primary, but some of the others bleed over into it.
Well, we have 12 main ones, and
mm-hmm.
there's, of course, we are all many, many different archetypes, but the major archetypes, like in the arcana, in the major arcana of the tarot, they resonate so strongly within us, and our particular destiny is shaped by those 12.
Okay. Well, let's just play this out a little bit. Say you had
yeah.
a 13 or a 14-year-old that you were going to do this with. How do you elicit the information you need to figure out what's in them, you know, what their life purpose is?
Well, I suppose a lot of the information would already be pretty obvious because you know how children are. They gravitate as you watch, especially if you're a parent and you watch what they like to do before someone said, oh, you can't do that or, you know, that's no-no. You'll
mm-hmm.
naturally see children, if they're, for instance, an artist, you'll see them, you know, drawing and creating things and putting things together and building castles in the sand and saying, hey, everybody, come and do this. Or likewise, if it's a child that's, let's say, an advocate, or a negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the children that are always negotiating with their parents.
Why can't
I do that? And yeah, you see?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about myself, and I think what I remember about myself was I was always organizing things, king cake parties, skating parties,
yes.
a networker, you know, bringing
you're
people
a
together
networker.
To do things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of your archetypes, then, because it's something that just, it's a repeat pattern in your life. You keep gravitating to those patterns of this is what interests you and this is what you do naturally.
Okay. And, now the divine aspects of God, you know, or, you know, we would say, you know, goddess, mm-hmm. that you use to create your beautiful images. You know, to some of our listeners, this might be kindergarten stuff, you know. But, you know, even for those of us who know it, I don't think it's a bad idea to be reminded of it. Because, you know, every day I think we're challenged out there in the world. You know, we're asked to make mm-hmm. choices. Right now, with all the, you know, the political chaos You know, I think, you know, we're being called upon to think about what our values are, and what side are we going to be on, you know? So I guess, why don't you share what you think the divine, you know, what you believe, whatever word you want to use, the divine feminine aspects of God are, you know, just to maybe food for thought. You know, people can think, well, am I really in alignment with goddess ideals or not?
Well, this is the probably the primary archetype of the goddess is love. And she is about living from our heart, not our heads. Ideally, you know, we want to be in union with the divine masculine and the divine feminine. And when we are initially born, we are these joyous, loving beings. And life says to us, yes, 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 and we're aligned with who we are, until the human mind says no. So it's about remembering our connection with our hearts, because we're born into a society, a culture, a tribe that has devalued the feminine and has taken the negative aspects of the masculine, because patriarchy is not the positive masculine. The positive masculine is clear consciousness, a beautiful container that the elixir of the divine feminine is poured into. So we don't even understand the power and the beauty of the divine masculine, let alone our own hearts. So the divine feminine is about us re-remembering and reconnecting to our hearts. And, you know, you all these cliches, the Hallmark cliches of the love, you know, the stationery that we have and all this silly that goes along with the heart and love and Valentine's Day. The deeper true essence of the divine feminine is taking the feeling, all the emotion of life and embracing it, the sorrow, the sadness, and becoming vulnerable to it. So embracing, being vulnerable, because that's the only way we can be in our hearts is by being vulnerable. So that's the key, I would say, of the divine feminine. I could just go on and on and on, but I know you have a limited show here, so.
So love.
Love.
You know, so putting it in context, you know, love. You're right. I mean, we know Jesus talked about taking care of the poor. Jesus talked about love. It's almost become trite, you know.
Yes.
But there's so many people out there that believe if we are nurturers, if we care about other people, for some reason, you know, that comes across as weakness, you know. And that's sad, really. I mean, I think in a way that's regressive thinking rather than taking us into an uplifted better place for the future. I mean, I don't know. Do you agree?
It comes from a place of fear, of safety, security, of some time in our history where we realized we die. And that place of death, that place of disconnection, which is untrue, it's a basic mistruth, has created in the human species, this has gone into the mind, because of our sense of separation and culturally indoctrinating our youth, our children, with fear of survival. And yes, there's a real, in many situations, there is a survival need in situations where we have the opportunity. We have abundance all around us and choice and opportunities. You know, we can evolve ourselves to a higher place, and the first thing we have to do is we have to find a place in our hearts to be vulnerable. And by being, not judging, opening our hearts, then those who feel we judge them can learn to see us and the truth and the love that we send to them. So without getting political about it, because we could go another half hour, I'd love to have that conversation with you. But that is the key, is to really stay in our hearts at all times and send love to those that, like Andy, you know, he's a great, and Jesus, you saw that they always sent love and walked in peace, and that is the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's fighting this fear, I think, of the scarcity mentality in order to be able to be generous.
That's right. And And the people that, it's an evolving process. There's something called Don Beck's. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's called Spiral Dynamics, and it's the evolution of consciousness. And when you look at this model, it's a brilliant model, and you realize, well, we're here at this place in the evolution of consciousness, and then it helps one understand that we're all evolving at different rates of speed, and there's a collective evolutionary cycle that's going on, and people that can open their hearts to the compassion of those that are still in a red zone of fight, mm-hmm. of fear, of contraction, we can hold the space for them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually our current president is an indigo child, and he is a very good model of compassion and opening a space for the chaos and the fear to take place. And yet when it comes to leadership, he can step in and with a heart, because so many of us like him and feel and sense that he's a trusting man, that he's mm-hmm. got a very intuitive, integrated feminine self,
mm-hmm.
that he is providing some of that modeling of what it would be like if a man in a patriarchal system actually integrated some of his the feminine aspects. And
I think that's probably a good segue into, I think you wanted to talk about the importance of feminine awareness. Where did you want to go with that?
Oh, feminine awareness. Oh, I'm seeing what context we could go with that. We could take that with the awareness of empowerment, of an understanding of how we become more aware of the divine feminine. Do you think that would be a good place to start in?
Well, I'm thinking feminine awareness, besides coming from a place of love, awakening the world, I presumed you were talking about, to this idea that we've been living in this this dominator, authoritarian father culture, and the shift is into feminine awareness, feminine consciousness, how that would change society. I mean, what does that look like? I was just assuming that's where you wanted to go with it. But you may want to do something else with it. It's up to you.
No, that's wonderful. Because that we can talk a little bit about more specifically what the divine feminine is and what that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge is for both genders to come to a place where we've integrated both our positive feminine and the positive masculine within ourselves. Mm-hmm. The right now we're living in a culture that has a negative shadow father and a negative mother complex. The mother complex is petty, vindictive, and shallow.
Oh, so the worst woman you've ever met.
Yes, yeah, and man.
Yeah.
We have it both, and we also have women, patriarchal women.
Oh, yeah.
That carry the negative masculine complex in a very severe way and are very dominating, authoritative, and judgmental. So I like to take it to the place of we all together are working, men and women, we all need to come together in union about how we can come to wholeness within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an individual job for both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Women can't save the planet alone without men.
Right.
We need our men, and they need us. And so the awakening happens when we rebirth a better model of the divine feminine. And that's why I love to say the divine feminine, because it takes it out of the cultural context. When you just say feminine, Unfortunately, in this culture, people go right to feminism, and they usually go, particularly nowadays, there seems to be a backlash, which is rather typical in situations like this, about what feminism is.
Yeah, because there's been so much negative propaganda about it.
Yes, and so this is why I think it's been helpful for me to take the conversation to a universal place where both genders combine, take the best of both, and integrate the two, and speak of it in that place, and empower our boys and girls and our men and women from a place of uniting the generous positive aspects of both principles, the divine feminine and the divine masculine principles, or the feminine masculine principles, because they're just principles. We all have the masculine and the feminine within us, yes. So to take those the positive aspects and also look at the shadow aspects, because that is what, and that is what the divine feminine brings to the table first and foremost, is she says it's important to look at your inner world. She takes us inside to self-reflect. And here we are in a world that is all about being outside of the self. Everything's solved by a pill. Everything's solved by let's go out and shop. And the happiness and the joy and the meaningfulness is a result of inner reflection. So this is one of the first gates of entering into a meaningful life and integrating the divine feminine is actually starting this path of let me look at my own actions and my own beliefs and let me see how congruent I really am. Do I really believe this, what my tribe taught me? Do I really believe what my culture, what my religion is saying? And reevaluate that until it feels right to you. And this could be a very wonderful, long, I mean, for me, it's been this incredible long adventure, and with constantly the changes and the unique new insights that come through, it's just been a lovely process. And yet we're so afraid of this divine feminine, this feminine principle of looking within to find the goal, to find the joy and the peace within ourselves. It's
well, you know,
there.
We're not
it's
taught
not
to, I don't think, you know, in this Judeo-Christian culture, you know. We don't even go to the divine ourselves. We need an intermediary, the priest, as if we don't have that power to do it ourselves. You know, we've not only been disconnected, we've been disempowered. And, you know, it's like something we have to relearn. I recently had a fellow on the show who was really great, and I think it's wonderful that everybody's coming to these same conclusions using different words, because your words may reach one group of people, his words may reach another group of people. You know, he was talking about men, the ascended male will discover his feminine yang. And I was thinking about that when you were talking about Obama, how he incorporates the sacred feminine within himself. Well, that's his feminine yang, you know. And there's so many men that I know, wonderful men, like my husband, for instance. I mean, we've been married, you know, a quarter of a century. He is so comfortable with his feminine yang. And, you know, he can, and I think when we're in wholeness like that, men can become protectors. You know, they don't have to be a warrior necessarily. You know, they can be nurturers. I think it just opens men up to a whole new way of being, and then that in turn helps society change, helps our culture change, you know, brings more positive aspects into the world instead of this patriarchal dominator, full of fear and control issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always like to describe it kind of as a gate or a threshold that we cross, and it's when we say yes to the divine feminine aspects of ourselves, and men and women, because when women do it, it's about empowerment. When men do it, it's about spirituality, because women have to do the two-step. unfortunately, because we've been so disenfranchised.
What do you mean that the two-step?
It's a two-step because women usually go through, they usually take the first step is empowering themselves through self-knowledge and re-remembering the goddess and re-empowering themselves with the history and all the ways that we can re-remember the truth of mm-hmm. the goddess and the mm-hmm. feminine in culture and her power. Then the second step is women use that gate, as men do, to actually dive down deep into the feminine mystery, which is where the awesome life and death, the chaotic, the irrational, all must be honored and acknowledged. Men usually, because they're somewhat, I mean, patriarchy is very hard on men as well. There's only a few that really don't get their feet burned to the fire. Men also suffer from patriarchy, and what they need to do is at least they have some cultural support in rah-rah to give them enough empowerment. I'm not going to say empowerment. I'm going to say give them enough self-esteem or juice to get out in the market, to get in the world, and to get the work done. Mm-hmm. Without the self-doubt that a lot of the women, we just have this much larger black bag of low self-esteem mm-hmm. Than the men. Mm-hmm. So the process for the men, they usually can go a little bit quicker into a one-step process into diving into the feminine rather than the women have to do. You know, maybe not everybody agrees with me about that, but I think that that's where the struggle begins for women is am I good enough? Am I enough? And men also have that to a certain degree, but not to the depth that women have to struggle with that sense of self-empowerment, because there's not enough mirrors in the culture to say, yes, you're good enough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
Well, no, forgive me. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were about to go on to your next point.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, the looking deeply at our own feelings and rejecting the armor of machismo and other defenses, you know, men and women must do at some point. And that's when we get to dive down into what feels like a really frightening place, because it is actually taking a look at our primal, authentic nature, which is looking at life and death and weather and having those questions. And this is all the divine feminine. She wants to talk about and be honored and acknowledged for the life cycles, for cyclical, for the way this world, the cosmos, the universe is so awesome and mysterious. She wants us to embrace the mystery throughout and be connected with that within us and without us. So it takes really courageous adventurers and special pioneers, people that can say, who am I? What is this about? What does this mean? And push against and say no, as you have done. Say no, this, the culture and the tribe, this is not the truth that I feel in my body, that I hear in my mind, that I see, that I sense. This is not the truth, with a big T. And re-remembering, and we all have the capacity to do that. It's just that some seem to have more of a fearless ability in their particular lifetime, being the now, to say, I'm ready to remember now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of maybe in 3 lifetimes or 10 lifetimes, if you believe in that, I mean, that's a convenient way for me to explain it, although it's not accurate. It's just another way of saying we can remember it all right now, who we are, and be truly aligned in union and integrated with the divine masculine and the divine feminine. The reason I'm such an advocate for the divine feminine is because she is the key that unlocks the first gate. She absolutely is screaming at us, yelling and screaming and loving us at the same time and saying, look now, humanity. It's time. The clock is ticking out. Look now. Look inside. Look at what you can do to be part of the change of this abundance, of this joyous now. And so she's calling us forth to be part of this shift into the Aquarian age, and we will not fail.
Well, now you say she's the first gate. Does that mean there's another gate?
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 and yes, and more yes. And the reason I'm laughing is it's often called this dive. I say it's a dive down, and I say it's a dive down because it's often felt and called the dark night of the soul.
Okay, you're going to have to define that. That could mean so many different things, I think, to so many different people.
I know.
What do you mean it to mean?
It is different for everybody, the experience of the dark night of the soul. But it is that moment of reckoning, of sitting with the self, when there's a surrendering or a realization that everything that you thought and believed in, which was, you know, plugged in when you were born by your tribe, just simply is no longer true. And
okay.
It creates this crisis in the human psyche. I mean, human beings, all we process it differently as we are individual, but it causes this profound crisis. It can be acted out in depression and...
I must have had mine already.
You might have even had a couple. I mean, I
well,
had one big, huge one.
Oh, did I tell you I was born in the Bible Belt?
No! Oh, my gosh. I love it. That's why you're such a wonderful advocate for women and the divine feminine. There you go. You have an advocate archetype.
So that's when you're sort of faced with, this is who I was, but that doesn't work anymore, and
yeah.
I got to figure out who I'm going to be. That's your dark night of the soul?
Yes, it's that moment of realization of surrendering to what is rather than what you thought it was and controlling the way you thought your life should be.
Okay,
and,
that
you
makes
know,
sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think
yeah.
that makes sense. You know, because, you know, I mean, it makes sense to me from the standpoint, I think I've called it before, the liberation of surrender. You know, there is a liberation in just surrendering to your destiny when you
yeah.
kind of figure out what that is and you stop fighting against it and then you sort of just flow with it. Is that what you're talking about, or are we talking about two different things?
The part that I didn't hear in what you just described, it sounds very similar, but the dark night of soul does come with a lot of suffering, interpersonal
mm-hmm.
suffering, and that's the part I didn't hear you say.
Oh,
and it
yeah,
doesn't
there's...
have to do with the mind. It's
okay.
total chaos, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from the standpoint of, you know, ideas that you have are shattered, you're disillusioned, and it's sort of like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Absolutely. Love that.
You know, yeah, I mean, I can relate to that for sure.
Oh, yes. You just took the words out of my mouth. I was thinking the same thing. I mean, this is exactly, it's learning by going through the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that embodies us, because then we know the truth.
Okay.
And it's so important in the divine feminine that we become embodied, that we feel the truth in our bodies. And that's where the soul, that's why soul work is so important and can be so, give so much vitality to our lives when we do honor the looking inward and dive in and do it and do the work and ask the questions, the serious questions like, who am I? Not from a, what kind of job am I going to have? You know,
mm-hmm.
how much money am I going to make? You know, it's
those aren't
who
the
am
things
I
you're talking about.
Yeah, it's taken from the depths of knowing who you are, you know, without having an adjective, a convenient adjective to make everybody in your tribe feel comfortable. It's about
mm-hmm.
knowing who you are from the depths of what is authentically true for you and living that out regardless of what the tribe says or anybody says, including your spouse.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah, and you know, and I mean, look, I've seen people, women particularly, you know, come to goddess spirituality, and they're maybe coming from, let's just say, as an example, a Christian background, and they still have those tethers on them from
yeah.
that Christian background, whether it be their family, their husband, whatever. And sometimes you see women being able to sever those tethers to be able to move forward. And some of them don't. You know, some of them just sort of get sucked back into a life of inauthenticity, I guess,
yeah.
if that's a word,
yeah.
inauthenticity,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
simply because they maybe weren't ready to face that dark night of the soul, you know.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it's divine timing, too. So we all have this path, and it's like the key to unlock the door, it comes in the right time for the particular individual, as long as they're asking the questions,
mm-hmm.
but it'd be meaningful questions in their lives, and they aren't just going through the motions of life based on what the tribe had produced and said, this is what you do if you're such and such and such, and you're from this background, and you this religion, and blah, blah, blah. You're basically unplugging. And, of course, the culture and the tribe don't like when people unplug and
mm-hmm.
say, I choose freedom. I
mm-hmm.
choose my essence, my authenticity, my clear expression of who I am. And
yeah.
I'm willing to go for that no matter. And some people, their timing might be quite there, or they're simply... it's not going to be their path in this life. And I think
right.
this is okay, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I just have this belief, I deeply believe that it's the divine works in mysterious ways, and we are not to know all the answers of why some particular people have the courage to move forward with the questions and the deeper truths and others don't. And I think we just let this and surrender this and let God take it. God has take this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, no, I think that's true, too, to expect
yeah.
everybody to be at the same level. You said it earlier, everybody's sort of moving at their own pace, and
yeah.
and I think we have to honor that, even when some of these people we may think are regressive and, you know, regressive and holding society back from enlightenment, they're still
yeah.
at the place where they're at. They can't do any better just yet.
they're doing the best they can with all the resources they have. And it's like our purpose is to provoke them and to enlighten them and to move them. And even if they're not moving, we have moved ourselves and healed ourselves in wholeness, and that is a lot to
mm-hmm.
do in one lifetime. Just one individual soul re-remembering and reconnecting with Goddess, with God in union is like profound, absolutely
mm-hmm.
profound. And then you look at individuals that are wonderful role models for this. You just go, wow, it's really true that, what is it, the mustard seed can move the mountain, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Oprah, and then I think Michelle Obama, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like it goes on, the list grows. And then I think Karen Tate, and, you know, the list grows.
Well, I'm trying to relate personally to stuff that you're saying. I know myself, I understand things better if by example. And, you know, I'm hearing you say stuff like, well, you know, we might have to disconnect from our tribe. You know, we might have to do things that our tribe isn't happy with to be who we are meant to be. And, you know,
okay.
I'm thinking about about the women out there who became mothers who maybe didn't want to become mothers, you know. And I know the flack I got for not having children, but I birth other things. You know what I'm saying? And I think about my family's disappointment because I didn't stay Catholic, that heaven forbid, and I'm a Democrat too.
Gosh, so forbid,
it's like,
right?
I'm a total disappointment to my family, you know, but that's okay.
Yeah, because we just send them love and we just love them as they are. And by doing so, we're the model of the peace within us and that it's okay. And that will encourage and give them the courage to find
be
the freedom and the peace themselves. Exactly. I mean, I've got two sisters and, you know, it's such a challenge because I want to be involved and say, can't you guys figure this out? You know, you don't have to be suffering like this. And yet I am here available for them when they're ready. And I've made that clear to them. And when they're ready, they know who they can pick up the phone to call. And they do,
right.
You know.
Well, you know, Pam, I get emails from women across the country, and some of them will say stuff like, you know, I live in this red state. I can't tell anybody what I'm thinking about God. I look forward to your radio show on Wednesday night because it's like you're my connection to the goddess world kind of a thing. Mm. And I think our conversation tonight helps these people, whether they're men or whether they're women, know that, you know, they're not alone going through this dark night of the soul, you know, these choices we have to make to either be who we were meant to be or live out somebody else's idea of who we're supposed to be. And I don't know if we got a little off track, but I feel like Goddess is our mother. She wants for us what we need to be happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that doesn't always look like what our tribe might want for us.
That's right. And, you know, God bless them. Goddess bless them. It's just, it is challenging. And I think one of the things that really helps is the way they're connecting, listening to the radio show, going on Facebook, finding your soul tribe, connecting with other women, with Goddess. And little by little, we make the steps we need to move us closer to expressing our having our voice and expressing ourselves authentically.
Right. Well, and you know, and I know this is going to sound cliche, but I've, you know, in my life, I've learned that this is true. You do, it's the baby steps, you know, you can't, and you know, it is what you learn during the journey, not at the destination. You know, by the time you hit the destination, you're fully cooked, maybe, you know, it's the stuff you learn, you know, on that road that I think really teaches you and helps you become who you're going to be. It's not the brass ring at the end of the journey. It's the journey.
Yeah, I so agree with you, Karen. I do. It's just, and it's hopefully while we're on the journey, we're just enjoying the abundance and the beauty and, you know, remembering, tapping into all that she gives us all the time. I mean, just around us. Go on a nature walk. Reconnect with your dogs, you know, your kids, your on that heart-to-heart level. Pet your cat, you know. Never, never hold off on the love and having an open heart and going out there and doing the things that you love to do, you know.
Right.
Because Mother
wants
us, you know, to do that. She's so abundant, she cannot die. She will never die, we never die. And that's another topic.
Well, except that we're out of time now. So
it's
right about 7 o'clock, and I see my next guest is on the switchboard. But before we close, Pam, I want to ask you one more question, and I want to make sure we give your website again, because listeners, please go look at the beautiful, beautiful artwork. Look at the deck. Really, I think you'll be flabbergasted, quite frankly. And I guess I just want to say, Pam, you know, we didn't get to everything we were going to talk about tonight, but what would be one of the most important thoughts, if you haven't already said it, that you'd like to leave listeners with?
You know, I think just follow your heart would be a wonderful theme, and the divine feminine would really, really love that as well, you know.
Okay. And your website, you want to give that to us?
It's artmagicpublishing.com. And also you can find me on Facebook at Goddess Art Creations. Just type it into the search bar. And I'd love to connect with all of you. And please feel free to say hi.
Okay. And if you go to Facebook, will you see some of your beautiful art there?
Oh, yes. There is a gallery and a portfolio online along with several articles and a blog. I write a blog every quarter. I write an article about the Divine Feminine.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Pam, it's been great. Thank you for reminding us about, you know, the aspects of the feminine that we need to get us through.
yeah.
You know, to get us through that dark night of the soul, to get us through every day, because, you know, we're living in chaotic times, and I think it's really comforting, that's the word I wanted, comforting to remind ourselves, you know, what she is all about and what we're working toward, you know, to rebirth her ideals into the world, you know, rather than what we have right now that doesn't work for the most of us.
That's right. It's an exciting time to be alive. It's an incredible
Absolutely.
Transition, and we just have to buckle up our seatbelts and enjoy the ride, you know, warrior, priestess, goddess. Speak up and let's just enjoy the ride.
Oh, well, thank you, Pam, and
you.
Good luck with your good luck with all your beautiful work in the world. You're certainly embodying the sacred feminine in your work.
Well, thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay.
Good
night. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking, or the feminine consciousness, as some of us like to call it, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values just can save the world. You've been listening to Pam Wells, artist of the truly beautiful and deep, deep, deep deck called Affirmations for the Everyday Goddess, book and cards, and her website is goddessartcreations.com. Well, it's that time when we're crossing the threshold into the next part of the show, and I am going to take a very quick one-minute break or less, won't be more than that, and then I'm going to come back and talk to Julie Lohr, and we're going to discuss discovering Goddess through astrology and symbols, and while I'm going for this 60 seconds, I'm going to let you listen to Corn Mother by Lisa Thiel.
Sacred Corn Mother, come to me. Make my way sacred, fill me with beauty. Sacred Corn Mother, come to me. Make my way sacred, fill me with beauty.
Well, I think that was Corn Mother. I might have that mismarked. I'm going to have to check. Well, anyway, let me say hello to Julie. Are you with us?
I am, Karen. What a delight to be here with you this evening.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you're with us, Julie. Let me start by sharing your short bio with our listeners so they have just a little sense of who you are, and then we'll jump into the questions because I'm really interested in how Goddess is connected to astrology. Okay, so listeners, Julie Lohr, she is the author of Goddesses for Every Day, as well as 6 previous books under the name Julie Gillentine. She contributes Gillentine. Thank you.
Nope,
she contributes.
Ever gets it right.
She contributes to numerous magazines and journals and writes a popular astrology feature that appears in Atlantis Rising. She lives in Pagosa Springs, Colorado, and you can find her at a website online by her name, Julie Lore, J-U-L-I-E-L-O-A-R. So, Julie, you know what? If I don't ask you this question first, my listeners are going to, like, throw tomatoes at me through their through the screen some kind of way, if that's possible. What's the deal with everyone's astrological sign changing, and do we really need to be following the new symbol if ours changed?
Oh, gosh, what a big question. I love that you asked that question. The answer is no. Everybody's
Yay!
Sign is still the same.
Well, you know, I switched from being a Virgo to a Leo, and I got to tell you, I still feel like a Virgo.
Well, I can hopefully give a short answer that people will understand, but it's a little confusing, and it's fascinating to me. This is something, of course, that astrologers speak about, but I don't know what it was. Sometimes it's just the time that article by that astronomer triggered such a response, but In simple terms as I can make it, the astrological signs are based on the seasons. And every year, without fail, when spring equinox begins or happens, that is the beginning of the astrological sign of Aries. So the equinoxes and the solstices, the four cardinal points of the year, as they're called, are the anchors of the 12 zodiac signs. That hasn't changed, and unless something knocks the Earth out of its orbit, it will not change. What does change, however, is the phenomenon that gives us what are called the astrological ages. The Earth shifts relative to the stars, and nobody really knows why. The theory is because the Earth has a slight wobble on her axis. But what that causes is and it's marked in the northern hemisphere, again, at the spring equinox. People have watched the sunrise or the stars for thousands of years and noticed that there is a backward motion in the sky relative to the stars that rise before the sunrise on spring equinox. So approximately every 2,100 years, a new constellation moves to that point. That's what shifts. And over the last about 2,000 to 3,000 years, it's moved backward relative to that point 23 degrees. So that's what the astronomer was talking about. Both things are true. And the last time that point in the sky aligned with the sign of Aries was actually nearly 4,000 years ago, the last time it was marked. So hopefully that's not too much of a technical answer, but the astrological signs have not changed.
Okay. Well, that's sort of the bottom line. We don't have to worry about being in sync with a different sign if our sun sign or whatever seems to have moved. We can just go back to the old way of thinking and not lose any sleep over it.
Rest easy, you're still a Virgo.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to hear. So let's start with how might the sacred feminine, how is it linked to astrology?
To me also, that is such a big and wonderful question, and I've been exploring it. I've been doing astrology for 40 years, and the astrology that is done in the West was largely inherited from the Greeks and Romans. And as you well know from your scholarship, the myths began to change around the time of the Greeks. And over time, we moved from society or culture or human race that largely worshipped a great goddess. And then over time, the age of what's often called the age of heroes, again, approximately 4,000 years ago, and then the patriarchal age of the Abrahamic religions. So what was lost in all of that was an equal balance in astrology between masculine and feminine symbols, between gods and goddesses. So even today, most people who learn astrology begin with the planets, of whom only one is female, Venus, and although the moon is considered a planet in astrology, of course it's a moon. So I have perceived a real imbalance with that, because originally the Titan gods were an equal number of male and female, as were the Olympians. But somewhere along the way, in this, with the rise of the patriarchy, that balance was lost. Hmm. Began to be regained a bit with the asteroid goddesses that were discovered in the early 1800s. And things are also changing now with the demotion of Pluto. One of the results of that was the what used to be called the asteroid Ceres in the asteroid belt got promoted again back to a dwarf planet. I mean, I could probably talk for the whole time just myth of Ceres, who is Demeter in the Greek, of course,
mm-hmm.
and the relationship. So it's amazing, actually. So I think that I'm kind of on a campaign to have astrologers treat Ceres with as much significance as they do Pluto. I don't know.
And now this is an asteroid. Is that what you said? Ceres is an asteroid?
Well, she used to be an asteroid, but here's the thing. Ceres accounts for at least a third of all the mass of the asteroid belt, and she's round. She's not. Doesn't look like a lumpy potato. She's quite round and has been reclassified as a planet, as a dwarf planet. And so she's so far unique in the whole solar system, although Vesta, which is kind of round, may get reclassified. So it's an entire new paradigm of thinking for astrologers prior to her reclassification, which happened at the same time Pluto got demoted.
But we didn't hear anything about her.
Isn't that the point, right? All we
right.
knew about was Pluto being demoted, but we didn't hear, and as I said, I'm kind of on a mission to talk about this, this incredibly powerful feminine archetype, and you will know this, that the rites of Demeter and Persephone and Eleusis persisted for 1,800 years. I mean, as long as Christianity's been around.
Mm-hmm.
People from all over the world came. So to me, and I'm working on this and writing about it, to me it represents, as you speak about, the reemergence of the sacred feminine in a very powerful way. And I think astrologically what she represents in people's charts, I don't have a lot of data yet, but I'm examining people's charts. I think what she represents is something that is, in a sense, disenfranchised in our psyche, that lives in a kind of underworld or shadow aspect of our consciousness that needs to be reclaimed through a symbolic journey to the underworld. So,
well,
Julie,
could it
work?
Could it? I mean, you know, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, and don't be afraid to contradict me because I don't know what I'm talking about. But I'm wondering if this could literally be the sacred feminine that's been so dormant in this patriarchal world that they live in. Could she represent, you know, our awakening, her rebirth, or it's more complicated than that?
I think so. Well, the answer is yes to both questions. I think she definitely does represent that, and I think that it's, and of course, also other feminine archetypes, other bodies that are discovered in the solar system. But here again, there's an interesting parallels about this. Ceres is like the dividing line. The asteroid belt is the dividing line between the inner planets, what are called terrestrial, and the gas giants that are on the other side, and she's in a belt. It's very interesting, the parallels, and Pluto's in a belt outside the gas giant. I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think that individually in a horoscope, she represents what needs to be reclaimed in the individual, but collectively, as you're suggesting, I do think that's what she represents, the reawakening or the reexamining, the reclaiming of the feminine in all of us.
I know you wanted to talk about certain symbols that are always associated with the sacred feminine. Which ones are those, and are they related to astrology, or are they separate from astrology?
Well, my connection with them in astrology was something I perceived when I wrote my last book. But through the work of Marija Gimbutas and others, and I realized it too, it certainly wasn't an original realization on my part, but people have recognized that around the world, certain symbols are always connected with the feminine, and there doesn't seem to be any departure from this. For example, doves and spiders and spirals and serpents and birds, in addition to doves, bees. So there are always symbols, vessels, for example, like a chalice, always are represented as symbols of the feminine. Some for obvious reasons, some for not. And it's something that I had one of those moments. Judith Orloff says that the shower is the psychic phone booth. I just love that. And I had one of those moments one morning where I had been reading about this and thinking about it in my own mind. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I wonder if I could perceive or if there would be a relationship between the 12 signs of the zodiac and these symbols that are always related to the sacred feminine. So I rushed out of the shower and went back to the computer, and it just flowed. It was one of those moments where it just happened. And so I call them the goddess signs, and that's how I used it to organize the goddesses in my last book. So I think that maybe somebody else might say that's a stretch, but for example, I used the spider to represent the sign of Scorpio, and of course the spider is a feminine symbol from many different cultures, diverse cultures in different parts of the world, but mm-hmm. always seen as a creator, right? Always mm-hmm. seen mm-hmm. as something spinning the web of existence. And
right.
it's very much like the creative energy of Scorpio. I aligned the bee with the sign of Gemini. It's a symbol of course, moving from flower to flower and fertilizing and pollinating. And, of course, bee goddesses have been revered, certainly in ancient Greece and Crete, but other cultures as well. And for honeybees, what's at the center of the hive? The queen. So that's just kind of a small example of how I perceive these symbols to be, if looked at through the eyes of the sacred feminine, how they can be aligned with the astrological signs.
Now, and I don't really know a lot about Gemini. Is there sort of a thread between Gemini and bees? What's the correlation?
Oh, it's a good question, and I'm sorry that I didn't make that obvious. The nature of Gemini in astrology, it's called mutable air sign, and it means that it's the most, if you will, sign that's in motion. Gemini is absolutely characterized by curiosity, constant motion, and Geminis are often jokingly referred to as social butterflies. So there is this sense of being in constant motion from one flower to another, and they're curious. That would be the absolute defining quality. So the idea of moving from one flower to another to both receive nectar and to pollinate as it goes is a really, I think, profound connection. So,
well, I'm thinking, too, you said Gemini was an air sign, didn't you?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And the wings. I'm thinking
that's
the fluttering of the wings.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And, of course, the ancient bee goddesses tended the hives and shrine, and they exist in many, many cultures. So it's the idea also of pollination And Geminis do that very much in their lives. They're all about the principle of relationship and all about what can I learn from as many different people as I possibly can.
Well, let me just ask you one more about one more symbol, and then we'll go on to my next question for you.
Sure.
I'm just curious about Leo. What would be the goddess symbol that you would associate with Leo?
This one isn't as obvious at first glance. It requires a little more explanation. I chose the cobra, the female cobra for Leo. Now, traditionally, Leo is represented by the lion. And it's the idea of pride and courage, bravery, the idea of sort of being the monarch of the kingdom, however big it is, whether it's the family or something larger. And in Egypt, it's the cobra on the symbol of the pharaoh that represents, along with the vulture, that represents the symbol of royalty, the symbol of dominion. And many cultures around the world perceive the path of the sun, which is what's said to rule Leo, as a serpent moving through the sky. So serpents are often solar symbols. They're symbols of Kundalini in the Hindu religion. So cat goddesses that relate to typical symbols and dragon goddesses that hold the fire and spit fire, as well as goddesses that had combined nature that were often powerful creator goddesses that were combined beings often of females and serpents are all included in that section.
Ah, okay. Okay, very cool. Well, now, from this question here, what's the difference between God and goddesses? That would seem to imply in astrology things might be a little different from what we're accustomed to.
Once again, and here's something that is an interesting thing to contemplate. I get asked this question all the time, probably you do too, the idea of, well, what do we need a goddess for? We've got God. I mean, why do we need something else? Isn't that sort of an all-powerful representation?
And, no, it's not enough.
Again, it's not enough. And I say to people, well, imagine a family where there's no mother, no wife. All there is this aged, authoritarian father figure who does everything by the rules, who has no warmth, who has no love. And I would submit that is going to be one dysfunctional family. And so to me, it's the same idea that what we've done in the West or with the monotheistic religions. In the context of astrology, it's the same thing. As I mentioned, the only actual planet in astrology, now we have Ceres again, was Venus. And also what was done to Venus as a symbol is really almost to have turned her into a caricature of what was the original power and quality of the Greek Aphrodite, but she became the Roman Venus, who became diminished in many ways. So it's my feeling, and I believe, by the way, in astrology, that the planets Saturn and Neptune should be considered feminine because, again, of their original myths to create much more of a gender balance in even the planets and the interpretations. As far as the signs go, every alternating one switches gender and polarity. So in the signs themselves, there's six of each. But with the planets, it's a predominance of masculine energy, which doesn't really allow for the ebb and flow of the different kinds of energy. So it's part of my campaign, too.
I think that's worthwhile. We need to have balance everywhere.
Yes.
What criteria did you use to decide that you thought Neptune and Saturn should be the goddesses?
In the case of Neptune, the earlier myth, the earlier goddess, one of the ones who was considered to be a chief deity among the most archaic sources was Amphitrite. she was the literal embodiment of the ocean, of all of the waters that encircled the land. And again, as the myths moved forward into Greek time, it was Poseidon who forced her to marry him so he could become lord of the sea. That's a common story through all the myths, especially through the Greek and Roman that we've inherited. Zeus did the same thing with Hera. I mean, there's many stories of how the male god married a female goddess who was very powerful, and he took over. So mm-hmm. I think a better concept for the idea of Neptune would be a goddess. Calypso is another name, but it was Amphitrite who was originally all of the waters of the earth, which circled the land, and all of the creatures of the sea were her children. And water in every single culture I have ever found, I haven't found a single exception to this, water is always feminine.
Right,
and
right.
In astrology,
but it's not like there isn't water on Neptune, though.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Not in terms of... But in astrology, Neptune is seen to be the ruler of Pisces, which is the most fluid of the signs.
Gotcha. Okay, now I'm
so
getting it. Okay.
Well, right, I'm sorry. I'm assuming...
No,
and
you got to figure a lot of us are in kindergarten here. You have to help us connect the dots.
You're absolutely right. So I appreciate that you're stopping and asking me because it's a really good point.
And then in the case of Saturn,
I think that Saturn might more appropriately be considered as Rhea, the Titan goddess. It was the one who originally carried the sickle of time, and in the Jewish Kabbalah, that tradition, Saturn on the Tree of Life is seen as a feminine influence. And in astrology, Saturn is seen to be the ruler of Capricorn, but is also seen to be the principle of form, the literal matrix and web of existence through which everything comes into form and is held in form. And to me, that is a quintessential feminine idea.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like Gaia herself. And isn't Rhea Gaia's daughter, if I'm remembering correctly?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Gaia and Uranus were right.
Okay. So we're finding out that we have goddess asteroids. We are attributing more of the planets to the sacred feminine. We're seeing more of the symbols in astrology as feminine. So it's sort of like we're sort of updating and revamping the whole way you're looking at astrology. Now, I'm not an astrologer. I know very little about this, so forgive me if this is a stupid question, but does that change how... say, for instance, when you go get a chart done, does that change anything, by changing the gender, which changes the attributes, I would think, or no?
It's a great question. It's certainly not a silly question at all. It goes to the very heart of the issue. And I, in my opinion, the answer to the question is yes, it does change it, because in astrology, Saturn is a really good example. As most people would learn astrology or learn about it, Saturn is often depicted as the principle of karma in some ways, and is often depicted as kind of a stern taskmaster, sort of like that father god I was talking about. If instead we were to think of that principle as choice and consequence and free will, and like a mother who sets the rules and says, you can operate within this parameter, but if you make this choice, you get this consequence, and there's no punishment involved. It's we get to choose and we get to have a consequence. But if it's the idea of a teacher who's really helping us, instead of someone holding a rule book that's punishing us, I think it's a very different way to look at it.
it's a little bit more liberating. It's not so stern and controlling, or I think. Well, now, mm-hmm. does this play into the idea at all of what I've heard called, and I don't know much about it, the Saturn return? That is that something we have? Am I remembering right? Every 7 years or something, or
the actual return is more like every 29 years in what it means. But there are, if you divide that by four, then it's seven plus something, because it's usually 29 and a half. It's based on how long it takes for Saturn to go around the sun, which is 29 and a half years. So in every person's life or in every entity's life, whether it's even a country, our country's having one right now, by the way, that's called the Saturn return. Every 29 and a half years, Saturn returns to the place it was when you were born. So the first one happens in someone's life at age 29 and a half, and then at about age 58 or 59. And yes, I think that, again, viewing how that experience impacts someone based on the fact that we might be dealing with a mother figure who might have more compassion and might be teaching us our lessons in a different way than a very stern, punishing sort of father figure. I like your word of liberating. I think that's really accurate.
Well, now if the you've got me starting to think political now. If the country is going through its Saturn return, is that why we're seeing such chaos right now? Or why
definitely
so much is being revealed about the darker sides of the country? Or
it's definitely one of the reasons. We could probably talk a whole hour about that too, because a lot of things are being triggered. Obviously, the country was born on July the 4th, 1776, and there's a time of signature. So astrologers look at a particular chart of a country, of a nation, of a corporation. As an individual that has a birth time, has a birth chart, and the chart of the United States is being triggered in quite a few different places, and it's going to continue to happen pretty much for the rest of this year. And I think that the United States is having a crisis of consciousness and conscience, too, as a result of this. So it's there's more to come with this, and I think that the other thing that's happening, again, just to speak kind of generally astrologically, is the planet Uranus is moving into the sign of Aries, and that influence is what's bringing people out into the streets, not only in the Middle East, but in our own country now, and I look for that kind of energy only to increase. That influence will last about 7 years.
Wow. So we're going to be rallying in the street maybe for the next 7 years now that we've finally woken up.
Yes. I think so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Well, I hope so, too. I've been waiting for somebody to tell me where and when.
I know. Haven't you just been amazed? It's like people have just sat back and watched and sort of taken it or cried in their beer, and I think it's terrific.
Well, you know, Julie, I know this is a little off subject because, you know, I want to keep relating, you know, goddess to astrology, and there's some other important questions I want to get to. But I think maybe it's important to just segue just for a moment because I think so many people are a little bit on edge. I mean, what have, you know, astrologically, what have you seen for the future? I mean, is there anything you can feel confident saying we might see ahead? Like, I don't know if I'm saying necessarily what's going to happen in 2012, but I don't know, just sort of an overview of what we might be able to expect?
Astrological predicting is a lot like the weather. We can tell influences that are coming and intense storms, or is it going to be a sunny day, that sort of thing. And the energies have been intense for quite some time, and it's going to continue. I think that we can expect to see a lot more change, a lot more waking up. Two things that have been happening, without getting too technical, is two of the gas giants, Uranus and Neptune, have been in each other's signs for quite some time. And if my calculations are correct, the way that's happened can really only happen every couple thousand years. And last year they've been exactly 30 degrees apart, and that creates this low-level tension. Last summer, we had like 5 and 6 planets forming a T-square in the sky. We had the oil spill. We've had several things. Frankly, most astrologers were surprised that things that are happening now in the Middle East didn't happen sooner. So we have these things of friction. The planet Saturn is moving through the astrological sign of Libra right now, and soon the planet Jupiter in the sky, which is also in Aries, is going to oppose Saturn, be on opposite sides of the sun. That combination happens every 20 years, and it's usually one of saying who's holding on to the past that needs to be let go of, and what are the forces pulling toward the future. So it's impacting all of us individually and collectively. I also mentioned before that Uranus is in Aries, and that combination has revolution as its middle name. It is a very powerful energy for change and for waking people up. So my own sense is that it's going to continue to be quite intense and transforming. It's not a bad thing, really. I mean, it's one of those things that, as you were saying, people are waking up, and there's been a great deal of inertia, in my opinion. And that has to change. We're moving into a different time, a different way of being, and I think it's going to be a rather exciting ride for another 4 or 5 years.
Somebody just
but
sent me an email. I'm sorry, say again?
Oh, I was just going to say, on the other side of it, maybe 2016, out that way, I mean, moving out more into the future that way, there will be a new era, I believe, of peace and prosperity and a different way of being. But we have a few more years to go through and a lot of growing up to do before we get there.
Okay. Well, someone just sent me an email, and they said, please, please ask her, has she done the chart of Barack Obama and Sarah Palin, and will either of them be the next president?
I have not done Sarah Palin's chart. I have done Obama's chart, of course, and contrary to what most people say, he does have a birth certificate. I don't know. My own, and again, that's a technical astrological answer, but what I can say is the energies in his chart are moving him into a phase of being much less behind the scenes, as he has been his first year, and out into the open. I think that he is obviously being presented with a great deal of challenges, and if he's able to navigate it, it's too soon to say, of course, and we really don't know. I have not done Sarah Palin's chart, so
okay.
I think it's too soon to know, but I'll certainly be looking at it as time gets closer, and whoever else is going to be in the running in this whole thing. But I think we can look to see, especially as summer gets here and into next year, what will look like a change of style for President Obama, but in fact is something forcing him to move from a more inner way of expressing to a much more outer, using more of his charisma.
Finally.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Finally.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me segue back to Goddess. Okay, what's the relationship between Goddess and immortality? That piqued my curiosity.
In Joseph Campbell's work, The Hero's Journey, which, of course, he was gathering stories and myths from all over the world, the key point in The Hero's Journey is the point at which he mates with a goddess, and it is the hero's relationship with the goddess where, as in every ancient culture, it is a goddess who confers kingship, who is the
right
one who confers sovereignty. And that's the point at which that the ordinary hero is transformed into a god. And I believe that there is a relationship between what's called Kundalini in the Hindu tradition, which, by the way, she's a goddess, often viewed as a serpent or serpent form, or seen to be coiled like a spiral at the base of the spine. And I believe this larger story symbolically of the hero's journey represents that process in all of us. And in the Eastern traditions, the way in which someone achieves immortality, according to what we're told, is through the awakening of the Kundalini and its movement up the spine in two twin currents to awaken the higher centers. And ultimately that enlightenment and ultimately the changes that take place in the body can confer immortality. This, of course, is also in several traditions, including Hinduism and including Greek and in many others. There's always a goddess who dispenses what's called ambrosia in the Greek stories, Amrita in the Hindu stories. And there is also this relationship mythically. The Taurus goddesses, by the way, are the tree of life. I found it all over the world. You must have, too. By the way, I adore your Sacred Places book. It's one of my absolute favorites.
Oh, thank you.
I love that book. But around the world, there are myths of goddesses who live in a Western garden, and they always have a tree of life, which is almost always guarded by a serpent, and the tree bears the fruit of immortality. So it's only through the knowledge of the goddess and her mysteries of also death and rebirth, where there is no death, that we have access to the idea of immortality. And it is this nectar from the fruit of the goddess that gives the gods, the divine beings, their immortality. So I think the secret is hidden there.
So, but does this connect back to astrology in any way?
Well, it connects back to astrology in the sense that the path of astrology is really very similar. It's a circle, it's a spiral, it's a constant movement on the wheel, but that same knowledge is contained, it's often masked and hidden by the more, I guess you would call it, esoteric knowledge of astrology, or through practices of meditation, all of the rest of it, and through the sign of Scorpio, which is a feminine sign. And then we could branch off into the other thing that hit the news. At the same time, that astronomer talked about a 13th zodiac sign, Ophiuchus, which is the serpent bearer, and it's in the sky between the signs of the constellations, rather, of Scorpio and Sagittarius. And again, there's the myth that's so fascinating here again about the knowledge of immortality. The serpent bearer constellation was put in the sky to represent Asclepius, the healer from Greek myth. And, of course, we could go into that myth as well. The reason he ended up in the sky is that all of his patients were being healed and never dying again. And so Pluto got pretty angry and said, I'm not going to have anybody in the underworld if he keeps healing everyone. And so he ended up in the sky as a constellation. So it's quite so here again, it has to do with the secrets of the serpent, the secrets of serpent wisdom, always feminine, and what that means to humanity as we walk that path of what's often called initiation. And that path is also the same circle of the zodiac as we move through it and as we undertake to do that passage more consciously.
Okay. Julie, I think we might have a caller for you. I'm going to check in.
Okay.
Sometimes they're just listening. Sometimes they do have a question, so we'll check and see. Okay? Is that all right with you?
All right. Sure, of course.
Hi, caller from the 541 area code. Did you have a question for Julie?
Hi. No, I don't. I was just listening in. It's the first time I've been able to listen in on the show.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. I'll go ahead and mute you, and please stay with us, and thank you for listening tonight.
Yes, and I'm sorry I'm late.
So, Julie, the other question I wanted to ask you was about Lilith. She is a fan. I mean, well, my listeners are fans of Lilith. And I think you wanted to talk about who she is and why she's so important. And I'm wondering if this, again, has a thread back to astrology.
Yes, to all of that. Well, I'm a huge fan of Lilith, too. I think that she is an absolutely fascinating archetype. She has like four identities in astrology. She is a star, she is an asteroid, and she also represents two ways of calculating. It's like the point in the moon's orbit when it's the farthest from the Earth. And so that is what's often called in astrology or astronomy, the dark moon Lilith. And so she actually has multiple identities in astrology and astronomy, which I love. And in myth, very, very interesting. I mean, most of what we have learned about Lilith came out of the Jewish Bible, what Christians call the Old Testament, where supposedly, and by the way, there's diverse opinions about this, but what is often repeated is that the rabbis couldn't decide how to reconcile the fact that there are two creation stories in Genesis. One, where Adam and where humanity is created equal, male and female, simultaneously, and then the more familiar one that's told, where Eve is removed from Adam's rib. So the rabbis sort of made up this story that Lilith was Adam's first wife. And in that story, she is independent and says, I refuse to submit to you. We were created equal, and I'm not going to lie beneath you. And Adam insists, and she says no, and she leaves the garden. And supposedly Yahweh sent angels to bring her back, and she wouldn't go. And according to those stories, she was turned into a blood-sucking demon as a result. So she often has that kind of a reputation. There's a Lilith archetype in almost every culture that I could find, and this archetype is always winged, always sort of dark and mysterious in nature. To me, what Lilith represents psychologically and astrologically are all of the feminine parts of us, whether we're women or men, that we have somehow relegated, either individually or collectively, to the shadow side of our consciousness. She represents all the ways that we've said for thousands of years, it's not okay for a woman to do this. So to me, she is also this process of owning our power, of owning our right to say, no, I will not submit to that. But it can be difficult work even for ourselves, because I think, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think it's been a problem for women often to claim their power, to even know what feminine power looks like. So looking at Lilith in an astrological chart is a fascinating thing to do, because I find that it always reveals a place where someone, again, male or female, doesn't understand how they're using their power, often in a self-sabotaging way, or often in a way to sabotage their relationships, or they haven't connected with what their own unique capacity to be powerful looks like. She's
okay.
Amazing.
Well, and is there a planet associated with Lilith?
No.
I mean, how does she show up in the chart?
She shows up as a mathematical point for each person, and there's a different cycle, but she represents the place in the moon's orbit where it's farthest from the sun, or the light from the moon would be the most dim. So the moon represents our subconscious, how we form patterns, our belief systems, and so Lilith then represents how we might do all of that really unconsciously. So it's a mathematical point in the sky that depicts the relationship between the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun.
Okay.
If that helps at all.
Well, if you're an astrologer, I'm sure it does. To me, it's like, okay, if you say so. Julie, someone else has just popped up on the switchboard. Let me see if they have a question for you.
All right.
Hi, are you there? Did you have a question for Julie?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Did you have a question?
I'm not sure what questions I'm allowed to ask.
Well, you have time for one quick question because we only have about 10 minutes on the air, so I'll have to ask you to be brief.
Okay. Oh, it's a romance question. Is that allowed?
Sure. If it's within, if Julie can answer you, I don't know if she can, but give it a quick shout.
Okay. Well, I'm friends with this male Leo right now, and he has recently stepped away from me, and I just want to know if you see him coming back, and us just. Continuing our friendship.
Julie, is that the sort of question you can ask with no real information? Or
I guess I would just give her the simple answer. Well, the answer to your question is probably not, but the answer I would say to the caller is with a Leo, it's all about the pride and it's all about being the center of attention. And if somebody doesn't feel like they're getting that, they're going to go look elsewhere. So I guess I would just invite you to look at your own life about where you might be giving away your power or doing something just for the sake of making someone else happy, and if that is truly in your best interest.
Well, thank you, caller. Thank you for calling in.
I hope
you'll stay tuned in. Julie, we don't have much time left. We probably have about 5 minutes. There was another point you wanted to touch on, I was going to ask you to describe to the listeners if you believe Goddess is always a loving and nurturing mother.
That's a great subject to discuss too, isn't it? And the answer is absolutely not. It's certainly something we're missing in our whole archetype of the divine, but that was something that was a surprise to me, really, when I did the research of goddesses around the world from every tradition I could find, that the goddesses just like life itself, and so there are mother goddesses, but there are warrior goddesses, there are goddesses of healing, there are fierce goddesses who are very protective. The Hindu goddess Kali comes to mind. She's rather terrifying to contemplate at first, but she actually represents the whole idea of cyclical renewal. So I think that there's a famous quote, I can never remember who it is that said it, that if your only tool is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. And I think that isn't that great? I can't remember who said it. So for every person, male, female, or goddess or god, not every circumstance that we encounter calls for the same response. Sometimes it evokes an attitude of compassion or nurturing. The Egyptian goddess Sekhmet is another one that comes to mind, who, interestingly enough, was a goddess of both war and healing and was called the avenging eye of the sun god Ra. So she had her tremendously powerful, vengeful aspect where she destroyed the enemies of the Pharaoh. So I think that it's important for all of us to know, what is it that a situation requires? Is it something that requires a soft, loving response? Or is it like a mother protecting her young, which requires a ferocity like no other? So the goddess has all of those aspects.
Well, Julie, we're about out of time, so I wanted to leave a couple minutes for a closing comment from you. Aside from what we've talked about already, are there any thoughts that we haven't touched on that you'd like to leave listeners with?
Well, it's always, you know, that's always a tough question, isn't it? But I think that one of the things I learned in my research that was fascinating to me is that where wisdom, where the idea of wisdom has a name and a construct in the places that I could find, especially moving forward in time, it's always feminine. And I think that idea of Sophia or Shekinah or Sapientia, the idea of wisdom being the container of experience, holding that and offering it as the ability to act and respond more wisely is probably the essence of the divine feminine that that I'm always hoping people will grasp, that and compassion, which also takes a willingness to hold the sorrows of the world, like Kuan Yin, and still be able to love.
Right.
I think that the feminine does that better than the masculine.
Well, you won't get any argument from me. To have a world of compassion and wisdom instead of what we have now, wow. that's Christmas morning.
isn't that the truth?
Absolutely. I mean, we've just gone so far afield, and you know, things have gotten pretty selfish and ugly out there. And I think any of our avatars or goddesses or whatever, I think they would, you know, they would not give us passing grades. So, Julie, let me just mention your website again. It's julielore.com. That's JULIELOAR. And her most recent book is Goddesses for Every Day. Well, Julie, thank you so much for being on the show and enlightening us, you know, with the connections between goddess and astrology. You've taught me some things tonight I definitely didn't know, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, and thank you for asking me the questions and slowing me down if I get carried away. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Karen. I'm a huge admirer of your work and all that you do in the world, so it's been a delight to spend some time with you. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you, too. Good night. Good night, Julie.
Good night.
Well, listeners, I just wanted to let you know who is coming up on the show in these couple little remaining minutes we have. Next week, I'm going to be talking with Bob Walter from the Joseph Campbell Foundation. We're going to be discussing the power of myths and archetypes and how rational thought, how that new way of being replaced the ideas of goddess, replaced the idea of thinking in the we, and turned it into thinking for the self, for the I. And then the following week, returning to the show is Marguerite Rigoglioso, author of When God Was a Virgin Mother and The Eleusinian Mysteries Illuminated. Very interesting stuff we'll chat about, including an older Athena, the one that wasn't birthed from Zeus's head. And in our talk, we'll also discuss new interpretation for Persephone's rape by Hades, and much more. Then after that week, coming up the following week in March, is Laura Amazzoni, author of Goddess Durga and Sacred Female Power. We're going to discuss the many faces of Durga and how and why they're useful to women and men today. And finally, the very last Wednesday of the month, I'm going to have two guests on, Gary Bobroff and KD Harris, and the topic is going to be archetypal identity. We're going to discuss how we can recognize the archetypes that lie behind what motivates us and provides us with our greatest satisfaction in the world, as well as recognizing the archetypes at work that motivates others, whether they be in our family or maybe on the world scene. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope you will tune in again next week. And I'm just going to quickly close the show with a goddess prayer from the Goddess Temple of Orange County. So as we sort of switch gears here a little bit, here's tonight's closing prayer. Great Goddess, the life force in all quickens within as the season lifts from the dark of winter to the growing light of spring. With gentle anticipation, I feel myself enlivening in a fresh new way. Once again, expecting powerful and good things to continue to blossom in my life, just as spring will blossom into the fruiting of this summer. I am deeply grateful for my part in the great wheel of life. I stand in reverence to all forms of you. Thank you, Mother. Blessed be. Well, good night, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Please remember, you can always catch past shows from the archives. And I'll see you next week. Good night.